Well, the subject today, Joseph, and we're talking about temptation. What are the biggest temptations you have? I thought we'd start on this side of the room, and we kind of work our way around. And you can just kind of share one at a time what your greatest temptation is. Who'd like to be first? No. The Bible tells us that we're all tempted. Now, what are you tempted with? Well, I must tell you, I have certain temptations. One of my bigger temptations is to overeat. I'm trying to learn to eat differently. I'm trying to learn how to eat in moderation and not to gorge myself. So as our small group gets together this afternoon, I will remind myself again that moderation. Anyways, temptations. Well, we're going to look, especially at the end, how to handle temptations. But we're in week three of Joseph, and we're in Genesis chapter 39, if you want to be turning there. The first week we talked about Joseph's dysfunctional family. And I said, if you look up dysfunctional family, if you Google it and you see your family picture pop up, you know he's talking about you. But Joseph's family, all kinds of sin, all kinds of issues going on. And you know what? God still worked. He still was able to take charge. We remember that God's desire is to change us and to conform us, regardless what our background may be, regardless whatever the sin may be in our lives. And he wants us to raise above those things with his help, with that power that he gives us. Then last week we talked about favoritism, how that Joseph was the favored son. In fact, Jacob gave him a special coat. And I talked about the musical that's going on at the high school and that coming up. But that special coat showed that Joseph was loved more than his brothers. Not exactly a good thing. But what it resulted in was two things. Twins. Jealousy and hatred. And today we're going to see how that jealousy and hatred lead to the next step. And that is for people to do things that they wouldn't even think of doing normally. Devastating human relationships. So we begin today in Genesis chapter 37, verse 28. If you want to turn back a couple of chapters. And this is what it says. So when the Midianites, merchants, came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. Now, let me kind of fill in a few of the gaps what took place. Reuben, who was the oldest of the brothers, his plan was to come back and to pull his brother out of the cistern, not to have him sold, not to hurt him, to return him to his father. But whatever happened, he wasn't there when all this took place. But then to make things even worse, after they sold their brother, there was the cover-up. There's always a cover-up of a crime. You try to cover it up. And so the brothers took Joseph's coat and they dipped it in blood of an animal. And that way they could return it to the father and with the explanation that obviously some wild animal must have devoured him. In fact, you see that in verse 34 and 35. Then Jacob tore his clothes. He tore his clothes after hearing about what had happened possibly to his son and put on sackcloth and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. He said, "In mourning will I go down to the grave to my son." So his father wept for him. Now, you know there's something that's terrible about losing a child. We haven't experienced that, but some of you have. You always think that your children will bury you, not that you will bury your children. But when it happens, it's extremely sad. It's extremely hard. But you know what? Jacob suffered. And you know, as the father of his precious son, and you think about it, he struggled. Because he's thinking, how was my son killed? He was probably torn apart by wild beasts. And God said that he would take care of him. But as the story goes on, verse 36, again says this, meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. End of story. End of story. No, that's not the end of the story. You see, God was there all along. God was there to take care of it. Remember last week we said that the sovereignty of God, that God is there, God was taking care of him. We said last week from Jeremiah 29, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And God was there with Joseph in spite of the fact that now he finds himself in a foreign land, speaking a foreign tongue, not knowing anyone. God still had a plan for Joseph. We also said last week that God was in control. Circumstances don't change God's ultimate plan. God was going to take care of him. And thirdly, we talked about last week that God had a promise for the descendants of Jacob that was passed through Joseph. That historic setting now is that Jacob had to accept the fact that his son was gone and probably dead. And his brothers think that they've gotten away with this thing. They think they're never going to see him again. They're never going to hear from him again. And all that's behind them now. But in reality, Joseph is still very much alive. And God hasn't forgotten him. If you want to know something about Joseph's situation, we turn now to chapter 39 of Genesis, verse 1. Here it is. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was one of Pharaoh's officers and captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. You see, Joseph was sold as a common slave to a very important man. He had to relearn a new tongue. He had to learn a new culture. He had to learn how to handle all kinds of foreign situations. He had to adjust. He had to adjust to all the circumstances around him. But you know what? He also had to deal with Potiphar. And Potiphar was no one to mess around with. He was main man in the seasoned military of Egypt. And some think that he was actually like the head of the executioners. This man could be ruthless, I would take it at times. The text says that he was the head of the guard. But you know what? Joseph did not fear. And verse 39, verse 2, gives us the key to Joseph's success, and it's the key to our success too. That second verse says this, the Lord was with Joseph. Say it with me, would you please? The Lord was with Joseph. Strange country, strange place, all the different things were going on. But the second part of that verse says this, and the Lord, he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Notice that he prospered. Look at verse 3. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, notice that he observed it in Joseph's conduct, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. And Potiphar put him in charge of his household and entrusted him with his care, everything he owned. That's amazing, isn't it? Because of his faithfulness and because of his attitude and because of the joy he had and because of how he adapted the situation. Verse 5 says, from that time, he put him in charge of his whole household and all that he owned, and the Lord blessed the household. The Lord actually blessed his whole household because of how he responded of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything that Potiphar had, both in his house and in his fields, so that he left in Joseph's care everything he had with Joseph's charge. He did not concern himself except for his own food that he ate. The Lord was with Joseph, and Joseph prospered. Now, clearly, God was the key to Joseph's success. Clearly, God was the key. Now, I don't think Joseph had to tell Potiphar about the Lord, necessarily. I think he realized that the Lord was with him by how he acted and how he handled himself. You see, Potiphar could see it in him. He could see it. And because God caused all that he did to prosper, he found favor in Potiphar's house, and he also helped everything that Potiphar did to do well. He caused his crops to do better and his cattle to do better. And so Potiphar increased his responsibility and his authority as he saw how God blessed him. Eventually, he puts him in charge of everything in the house, everything. He was his trusted worker. Now, to have an employee like that is pretty remarkable. That's a good way for us to be in our jobs and how we work. What a tremendous promotion had taken place from a common slave to now be in charge of everything in Potiphar's house. But it even gets better than that. You see, through Joseph, God blessed Potiphar. But his great success even comes with greater measure of trust. Let me say that again. Great success comes with greater measure of trust, which leads to greater times of unguarded vulnerability. You see, the temptations that come with prosperity are far greater than those that come from adversity. And so as he becomes more and more important, the temptations become greater. The temptations become greater. We see that all the time. We see politicians, we see athletes, we see successful people in business who do rather serious mistakes, rather serious flaws, and they stumble, they trip, and they fall. And we say, oh, shouldn't they know better? And many times, it's those kind of people of fame and power and authority and respect. And then they stumble and fall, many times over somebody of the opposite sex. You see, temptation that comes with prosperity are greater for those who have great accomplishments. That's why the Bible says this, verse 39, verse 6. Now Joseph was very well looking, good looking. He was well built and handsome. In the NIV, or in the Living Bible, says this: Joseph, by the way, was a very handsome young man. That means there's nothing wrong with being good looking. There's nothing wrong with being a striking, that kind of thing. I never had to worry about it much, but I suppose some of you did. But with those kind of attitudes comes the step that we tripped up so easily. In fact, in verse 39, verse 7, it says this: And after a while, his master's wife, that's Mrs. Potiphar, took notice of Joseph and said, this is what the text says, come to bed with me. Now that's a rather frontal approach, wouldn't you say? That's not very subtle. That's not very subtle at all. Remember, greater success leads to greater vulnerability. Greater success leads to greater vulnerability. Now watch out, because Satan sometimes subtly takes temptation, especially for those who are in important places. Some would have been flattered by that kind of an advance. Some would have been, oh, wow, the water cooler, somebody, said something nice to me. Maybe it's at the coffee break, somebody said something nice to me. Potiphar's wife, very frontal, come and go to bed with me. But you know what? Not Joseph. And you know what? It has to be that the Lord was with him, and I think a lot of it had to do with the way he was raised and the things that were put into his life. But without hesitation and being absolutely secure of himself in his God, he responded with boldness, "No way, no way." Now, Joseph's next thing is he tries to reason with Mrs. Potiphar. Let's talk about this. I want to say that that usually doesn't work. This is what happened in verses 8 and 9. But he refused. He refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in this house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to me. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me." Here's the next part. "Except you. Because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" He refused. He resisted the temptation. He said, "No way, Jose. I'm not going to do this." How could Joseph do that? The first thing was his loyalty to his master. His master had been so good to him. How could he do this to Potiphar? But the second thing, even bigger than that, was his loyalty to God. His loyalty to God. "How could I do such a wicked thing," he says, "of sin against God?" His sin would have been against God and his master. That's the way it is with sin. Sin has consequences in our families, but also it's a sin against God. "How could I sin against God?" Wow. Temptation. No. Take a stand. But you know what? Mrs. Potiphar refused to take no for an answer. And that's how it is with temptation sometimes. In verse 10, we read this. "And though she spoke to Joseph day after day," if you want to keep going, "after day after day," temptation was there. Joseph has to deal with it day after day. He refused to go to bed with her or even to go with her. You see, the important thing is to get away from the source. Temptation, once resisted, though, will not vanish. Temptation, once resisted, will not vanish. But Joseph refused to budge. And aren't we glad he didn't? He didn't. The highest hint of this comes down to what we read is he said no. Flirting was wrong. Back in James chapter 1, verse 13, it talks about the lust work, how lust works. It says this, "When tempted, no one said, 'God is tempting me.' For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desires he is dragged away and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is fully grown, it gives birth to death." It's kind of like fishing. That's what temptation is like. It's kind of like fishing. Let's face it, when you're fishing, you put some bait on a hook and you drop it in the water, or maybe a lure, and you're trying to lure something to come in and grab the bait. But you know what? That's the way sin works. It's a lure. But there's no sin in the bait. There's no sin in temptation. But the sin is in the bite. Let me say that again. The sin is not in the bait, but the sin is in the bite. And Joseph wasn't going to bite. When you're given the temptation, you grab onto it. The secret is to do like what Joseph did. He refused to be weakened. He continued to resist. And Mrs. Potiphar kept dropping the bait day after day. But Joseph refused to take it. And his answer was constantly, "No, no, no." And finally, she sets a trap. A trap. You see it in verse 11 and 12 of Genesis 39. One day she went into the house to attend to his duties. This is Joseph. And none of the household servants was inside. Uh-oh. I wonder what happened to them. Maybe she dismissed them and sent them off. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." That's a pretty brazen attempt. Again, look at this. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran up the house. You see, 2 Timothy 2:22 says this, "Flee youthful lust." The Curry vernacular would say, "Run from temptation. Get away from it. Run." Strong words. Flee youthful lust. Run. You can't yield to sexual temptation when you're running from it. I know people that struggle with all kinds of temptations, but sexual temptations always starts in the mind, maybe in the eye, looking at things you shouldn't. And what Joseph did was he said, "I'm getting out of here." That's exactly what he did. In fact, the text tells us he ran into the street, and Potiphar's wife was left standing there, again, rejected with his garment in hand. Now, she's angry, and she's a rejected woman. That's a dangerous thing. She's angry, and she's feeling rejected. Very dangerous. And we say, "Joseph, beware of the angry woman." Look at verse 13. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Here's the conspiracy theory. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. And when he heard me, the scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." Liar, liar, pants on fire. Your nose is longer than a telephone wire. She starts to spin. Conspiracy. No, he came upon me. Well, how were the rest of the servants? He came upon me. And now Mrs. Potiphar's lust that went from anger to vengeance to conspiracy. And so she comes up with a false case against Joseph, all of it being circumstantial evidence, just his robe. But look at verse 16. It says, "She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home." And then she says to her husband, "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." 19. When his master heard the story of his wife, told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Wow. Did he really believe that his wife had been attempted, have somebody else attempt to rape her? I doubt that. But I think he was probably afraid of his wife. I think if he would have really thought that, he would have had Joseph executed. But instead, he puts him in prison with the king's prisoners. These are the prisoners that had made some kind of a offense against the king. So he places him there. But you know what my emotions are? My heart goes out to Joseph. Here he is again, in a place of confinement. He doesn't deserve it. I wonder what's going through his mind. I wonder if he's worrying about justice. maybe he's thinking, man, I've had such bad luck. I don't think so. I think poor Joseph, he's in prison, falsely accused. But you know what? The interesting thing is that's exactly where God wanted him. He was exactly where God wanted him, in prison. You see, God has purpose and a plan for Joseph, that we said last week. God has a purpose and a plan. In fact, we get into that in verse 20, the second part of that verse. It says, so while Joseph was in prison, the Lord was with him. Notice that. The Lord was with Joseph even in prison, and he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. Verse 22, so the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he made him responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care. Watch this. Because the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Second time, that key phrase, the Lord was with him. The Lord was with Joseph. The hand of the Lord was upon Joseph. But the relationship was reciprocal. The hand of the Lord was on Joseph. But you know what? Joseph also obeyed God. Instead of being bitter and angry and mad at God because he was trying to serve, as a result, he honored God, and God caused him to prosper. Even in prison, he's prospering. Even in prison. Amazing. Every place he went, he prospered. You know what? The question really is, how do you handle temptation? How do I handle temptation? How did Joseph handle temptation? He got out of there. He tried to change the situation, but he got out of there. And unfortunately, he didn't take his coat with him. How do you handle temptation? I want to turn to Psalm 1 and glean from that some principles for all of us how to handle temptation. In Psalm 1, we read this. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked. He doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked. He doesn't have to hang around with wicked people. Blessed is the man who watches his step, who knows where he's going, watches his life walk. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked. Now, here's the second part. That's the walking part. Second part is stand in the way of sinners. He doesn't stand. He's careful where he's standing. But the third part, nor sit in the seat of mockers. Notice it has a lot to do with where you're at in life, what you're listening to, what you're doing, what you're not doing. And then the psalmist says this, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. Where is his mind? He's meditating day and night on the law of the Lord. And then verse 3 is the promise. It says, he is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. And whatever he does prospers. That's a great promise. And that's really the promise of Joseph. That's really the promise of Joseph. In spite of his circumstances, watch where you walk. Watch who you're spending time with. But spend your time in God's Word and nurturing God's Spirit inside of you. And you will grow and you will prosper and God will bless you. And others will be blessed also. I think it's true in homes. I think it's true in families. God was honored through Joseph's life. You see, sin was out to ruin him. And Potiphar's wife was out to ruin him. But you know what? He stood. He knew when to flee. He did all those things. I love 1 Corinthians 10:13. It says this, no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. In other words, we're all tempted. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. You see, God provides a way of escape. You see, God is faithful. God is faithful. And he was faithful to Joseph, and he'll be faithful to you. That's really the message of Joseph. God is faithful. So how do you handle temptation? Watch where you are walking in life. Watch where you're spending your time. Spend time with God in his word, and you will grow, and you will prosper, and you will be a blessing to God and to others.